Pratipatipaya Pratipotitam Prakavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanu Santatami Bhagavad-gita Bhavad-vaishini. Yes. Abhyase pyasamartosi. Abhyase pyasamartosi. Madkarma paramo bhava. Madkarma paramo bhava. Paratham api karmani. Maratham api karmani. Kurvan siddham avapsyasi. Kurvan siddham avapsyasi. Abhyase api asamartaha asi. Mat karma paramaha bhava. Mat artam, mat artam, mat artam, api karmani, kurvan, siddhim, avapsyasi. This sequential, it starts really with verse 7, where Krishna is saying, you know, for those whose mind is really committed to me, you know, aveshitam, it means my whole buddhi, the manas, the buddhi, is committed to me, is committed to moksha, is committed to knowing me. Knowing me means knowing, it means liberation. To know me, to know Bhagavan, is to be liberated. Because it's all about moksha and knowledge are the same thing. Knowledge, self-knowledge, is liberation. It's not, doesn't lead to liberation, knowledge is liberation. So to know Bhagavan, to know Ishvara, is to gain moksha. Okay. The Mahavakya is that I am Ishvara. But to know Ishvara is to know I am Ishvara. So, he says, for those whose mind is committed to me, to knowing me, to gaining knowledge, to moksha, then he says, I become their savior. I am their savior. Savior from what? From the ocean of samsara, which is replete with mrityu, with birth and death. Okay. So, I become their savior, the savior of them. And not a long time. Not doesn't take long. It's not lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Once you're a mumukshu, once mumukshu, and a mumukshu means, to really be a mumukshu means, I'm committed to moksha, not to other things. It's not moksha is one of the things. If moksha is just one of the things, then I feel like, you know, if I get this, and I get this, and I get this, and I get some moksha, then it'll be fine. But for a mumukshu is the one who realizes that all these achievements, positive and negative, aren't going to solve the problem. They're not going to free me. Because all of them, both the karta, the doer, the karta bhokta, the doer, the enjoyer, and the enjoyed, positive and negative, you know, are time-bound, in constant flux, in fact. And so that there's no possibility of coming up with anything lasting in it when everything involved in the production of it is temporal. It's not a possibility. And so for the person who is a mumukshu, really, and if they are really a mumukshu, then I become paramount. I become the one that is to be gained. It's not that there's no other desires or things like that. It's just that everything else is secondary. Everything else falls under that. It's not equal. You know, they're not equal. The moksha and the antakarna shuddhi that's required, you know, that I'm working on to be able to gain that jnana nishtha, that rootedness. That is what is primary. So he says, for such people, I become the one who will pull them out of the samsara, free them from the samsara. And then he goes in the verse 8, he's now going to layer, you know, give layers of how this antakarana shuddhi, the purity of mind, which is necessary really for the mind to gain that jnana nishtha, and even to have the equipoise, the shanti to be able to hear, to do the shravana manana dhyasana. Really, this whole idea of antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind, is in relationship to the mumukshu's ability to do, even do shravana, to have a mind that is steady, you know, that is focused, and that can really receive this teaching. The teaching itself is what in the end brings about the absolute antakarana shuddhi, because it's the teaching itself, the recognition of my own wholeness, that the changeless wholeness that is my nature, the changeless fullness that is my nature, that really brings the mind into a state of shanti and calm. Because the mind doesn't have to now go anywhere to achieve anything. The mind, once the mind recognizes your nature, once you're a jnani, you know who you are, then the mind is not away from you for it to have to go out to achieve anything. So enjoying what it has always sought from the beginning of time, from beginningless time, what it has always sought, it's achieved that. Not in terms of a possession, but in terms of the recognition that what I've sought, lifetime, for infinite lifetimes, what I've sought is really the very nature of my being, it's the very nature of the seeker. And so that's the mind's recognition. When it recognizes that, it's like you've found the rainbow, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You've found what it is that you've wanted, and so now you have that, and you're still living, you still have a body, you still have a mind, you still have prarabdha to exhaust. But exhausting that prarabdha, you enjoy the fullness of your being. So he says, first, I pull you out of this samsara by giving the antakarana shuddhi and the jnanam. You need a mind that's capable of gaining this knowledge, that's available to the knowledge, and you need the knowledge. So then he says in this, so in verse 8, he starts by saying, you know, he says, having placed your mind, the manas, having placed the mind in me, your mind and your heart in me, and having placed your buddhi in me also, means the buddhi is the one who is gaining this knowledge, who is doing the shravana manana nididhyasana. So contemplating on me, recognizing me as Ishwara, and doing the upasana on Ishwara, you know, doing the upasana on Ishwara, and being devoted to Bhagavan, being devoted to Ishwara, and doing the shravana manana nididhyasana, so that saguna brahma upasana with shravana manana nididhyasana, that is, you know, do that, and it won't be a long time. You will enter me, and he says, and regarding this, there is no doubt. You know? Upasana. Now, if I'm contemplating on Ishwara, say for instance, if I'm meditating on Ishwara in form of upasana, there's a subject-object relationship. The karta, me, the mumukshu, is meditating upon Ishwara in terms of I'm devoted to Ishwara, I visualize Ishwara, I serve Ishwara, but it's not that I am Ishwara. So when we start, when the mumukshu, say, starts gaining knowledge, you don't come to this knowledge saying, I am Ishwara. But you can have shraddha and bhakti, and have your whole life really be in service to the Lord, in service to Bhagavan. But there's still that subject-object relationship, you know, between the two. And so upasana is when my mind is devoted to Ishwara, you know, is devoted to the Lord. And in terms of that, how really in terms of dharma, you know, I do dharma for the sake of Ishwara. My commitment in my activities is toward dharma for the sake of the Lord, you know, or as worship of Bhagavan. And in my meditation, I sit and do saguna brahma upasana, which means I visualize Ishwara, and then I perform karma yoga, But visualizing Ishvara, doing Upasana and Ishvara, and then also doing Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, you spend your time doing that, then there is no doubt that you will gain me in terms of knowledge. Okay? But then he says, if you're not able to do that, Upasana, that's a Guna Brahma Upasana, where I'm imagining, you know, visualizing Ishvara with Shraddha and devotion, and holding that in my mind, if I'm not able to do that, that type of meditation where I'm holding, visualizing something, visualizing Bhagavan in my mind, either as an Ishtadevata or the whole Swarupa, as I might be able to imagine it, if I'm not able to hold that in my mind, then I can, if I'm not able to do it, then I can do what's called Abhyasa, which is really, Abhyasa can just be the Ashtanga Yoga, the Patanjali Ashtanga Yoga, where I do the asanas, pranayama, dharana, these practices, the yogic practices, in order to gain a mind that we say has this naischalyatvam. For a mind that has this naischalya means it, you can hold it steady. The mind is steady. So if I want to focus on something, I'm able to do that. That's not, you can't take that for granted, you know. Sometimes you can experience what I'm talking about. If you're trying to read a book and you've read two pages, but your mind has been somewhere else, that naischalya isn't there. If you're listening to the class, you check in and out because your mind is going off somewhere else, and then you're pulling it back, going off, pulling it back. Well, that's the thing. If your mind is unable to really do that type of contemplation, then what do you do? Well, you pull it back. And then you pull it back again. And the Ashtanga Yoga is very helpful in disciplining the mind to be able to do that. The Yama, Niyama, or just different dharmic values to follow. But then the asana, learning the asanas makes the body comfortable. So your hurt knee is not pulling you, you know, pulling you away. Or you're doing pranayama, which is so helpful in just enlivening the body and also quietening the mind. And then dharana, learning how to bring in all of the sense organs and having them focused on one point, on one object, on the one object of meditation. Being able to focus the mind like that. And then dhyanam, to be able to hold that focus. These practices bring the mind, give the mind strength to be able to do the Saguna Brahma Upasana. So it says, if you're unable now, because your mind keeps wandering off, you're unable to do this type of meditation, then do these practices, this Ashtanga Yoga, or is for example, and practice, just continually practicing, bringing the mind back, and after some time, your mind will have the strength to be able to do that. And then, you know, doing Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, and this type of Upasana, this Saguna Brahma Upasana itself will bring about that Karma Yoga Buddhi. Because with the Saguna Brahma Upasana, I see everything that I experience as Ishvara. And so now my relationship is always to Ishvara. Because if I do the Saguna Brahma Upasana, there's nothing left out. Right? Saguna Brahman is really the whole Maya Upadi. So I see the whole Maya Upadi as Ishvara. And so then if that's my focus, then all of my activity is going to be an activity with Ishvara, in relationship to Ishvara. And so if I have that type of mindset, and I'm doing Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, that mindset itself, even though there's still the Kartritvam, the doership, subject-object relationship, it will resolve, you know. In the end, this jnana, it is ripe. Such a mind is ripe for receiving this knowledge. So in the beginning, Krishna says, that is the best. If you want to know, you know, what is optimal, this is optimal. but then he goes on to say, if you're not able to do that, then learn how to continually bring the mind back. You can practice this Ashtanga Yoga, and that will help give this naischalya. Naischalya means steadiness. Comes from the root chal. Chal means to move. Something chalati, it moves. Chalya is movement. Nice chalya. Nice means like meter. No. There's no movement. It is steady. It is still. It is focused. And so in terms of the sadhanas that we use for antakara nishuddhi, to gain that purity of mind, that natural relative shanti, there's two basic sadhanas. One is sadhanas for antakara nishuddhi. You know, and that's basically one form or another, as we're going through now, of karma yoga. The other is for antakarana naischalya, means steadiness of mind. Upasana and these meditative techniques bring about a steadiness or strength of mind to be able to be still. The karma yoga brings about the purity of mind, which also is the shanti. So they both support each other. You know, if your mind is shanti, has shanti, it's able to be still, because it is already still. Mm. You know, so the antakarana shuddhi is the one that's going to give you kind of a natural peacefulness, relatively. But the naischalya is also, it's like a training of the mind to be able to hold it still. One gives stillness by attitudinally. The other gives stillness by developing the strength to discipline, to be able to hold the mind. So he says, if you can't naturally, you know, do the Saguna Brahma Upasana, then Abhyasa Yogena, through the yoga of repetition, repeating over and over again, pulling the mind back, you will be able to gain me. And then, but now then he says, if you're not able to do the Abhyasa, like say, first you find that the Saguna Brahma Upasana, you try to meditate and you can't focus. You just can't do it. You're sitting there and your mind doesn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just frustrating. Okay? And so then, well, let me try some yoga. let me try to do some asanas and pranayama, you know, and keep trying to pull my mind back. And you know what? My mind doesn't want to do that. It isn't ready for that. That's not working. And for me to sit and try to do that is just frustrating, and it's not fruitful for me. So he says, abhyase api asamartaha asi. Asamartaha means if you're not able. So asi, you are asamarta. You're not able. You're not able what to do this. What to... You're not qualified to do this abhyasa. So in abhyasa, trying to bring your mind back, that's not working. You're not even api means even. You're not even able to do that. So he says, when that is the case, he says, then mat karma paramaha bhava. Then just be somebody who does the karma yoga. Don't bother now with the saguna brahma upasana. Don't worry about that. You just be a karma yogi. See this world, that all of the actions that you do be for my sake. And what that means, let the actions be for my sake. May you be committed to Dharma. May you do Dharma for my sake. Out of devotion to me, out of bhakti, out of love for me, may you choose to do Dharma. Or may you see me as Dharma itself. And seeing me as Dharma, may for my sake, may you perform Dharma out of devotion to me. To perform Dharma, another way to say it, may you choose Dharma. May you choose Dharma over your raga and dvesha. This is very simple. Raga, your raga and dvesha, your likes and dislikes, you know, confuse the issue of Dharma. So I know what's there, what my duty is, what there's to be done, but I want to do this. So instead of being swayed by your raga dvesha, choose Dharma. That's the mat karma paramaha. May my karmas, mat karma, or karmas for my sake, may that be paramaha, be the highest for you. That means much more to you than any type of raga dvesha. Because for many reasons, you're doing shravana, manana, and nididhyasana. You're working for antakarana shuddhi. You're trying to pull your mind out of samsara. Right? And so let me have an attitude of devotion to Bhagavan by choosing Dharma, which is really Bhagavan without the Jiva Srishti. So this is something nice, maybe helpful to understand. How if I see Ishwara just as Dharma, what does that really mean? One way to see it is see that Dharma, the natural order of the creation, versus the Raga Dvesha, which is the Jiva Srishti. So we have these two words, Ishwara Srishti and Jiva Srishti. But Ishwara Srishti is just Bhagavan's creation without the overlay of the Jiva. So if you take off the overlay of the Jiva's really likes and dislikes or the Jiva's projection, then you just have the raw creation as it is. It's Ishwara. But within Ishwara, of course, as part of Ishwara, there's the Jiva. But the Jiva is projecting upon the Ishwara Srishti, the Jiva's Srishti, the Jiva imagination. And so how would that look? Here I have Bhagavan. Srishti means creation. So the Ishwara Srishti is Bhagavan's creation. The Jiva Srishti is the Jiva's creation. The Jiva's creation is what is projected upon Ishwara's creation. And so say, you know, like the graham cracker story, there's only one self here with many infinite variety of namarupas, all of which are mithya. But there's one self here. And every self is the same. Every nama-rupa, every name and form has the same one being for its content. But the jiva doesn't know that all of this is me, that one content, which is the self. That jiva that has ajnana, that has ignorance, doesn't know this. And so what that means then, what happens is that I project that ananda, or the wholeness of my being, that's my creation, born of ignorance. I project all of that onto the creation in the form of raga dvesha. I like this and I don't like this. I want this and not that. This will make me happy and not that. And so that's the projection of really my own being. I see my being in on that, my being on that thing, but I don't see my being in that thing. You know? And so I'm running after. That ajnanam that allows for that projection is what is really the gasoline for the jiva. And so say my commitment now, as a mumukshu is trying to get knowledge, is not toward the raga dvesha, my likes and dislikes, which is the jiva srishti, the jiva's creation, imagination, you know, it's toward Dharma. What am I asked? What am I called to be doing in this situation? Yeah. What is the situation calling for? You know, actually, this does take some consciousness, because there's a lot of raga dveshas that are very subtle also. You know, where you just naturally kind of push aside the Dharma. Just in little ways. You push aside the Dharma, you're not even aware of it, unless you start noticing this. You push aside the Dharma and choose the thing that is more comfortable or convenient for you. Yeah. I've noticed that, because I've really started watching myself around that. It's subtle. It's very easier when they're big decisions. Raga dveshas that stand out as raga dveshas. There's also lots of little raga dveshas, you know, that are chosen over what would be a better behavior. It's interesting. It's interesting to look. And so there has to be some consciousness about that. So what he's saying, if you're not able to do the Saguna Brahma Upasana, and you can't bring your mind to even want to focus on that, it's not ready for that yet, then do this karma yoga. Follow Dharma for my sake. And then he says, do it. Now he explains that. Madartam api karmani kurvan. He says, doing all the karmas, you know, even doing all of these karmas for my sake, madartam, for me, means following the Dharma, choosing Dharma over raga dvesha. He says, siddhim avapsisi. You will be successful. You will attain, you will gain what you are after to gain, which is moksha. Means you will gain the antakarna shuddhi that goes hand in hand with gaining knowledge. Because remember, you are in the process of gaining knowledge. This is, the whole Bhagavad Gita is for mumukshu, who's studying, who's doing, you know, shravana, manana, nididhyasana. You are learning. But you find, you know, that your mind in your emotional life is lagging behind. Yeah? You're gaining this knowledge, you have clarity, but your mind is acting like it doesn't. Your mind isn't cooperating. It's going its own way. And so even though you know. And so what is it helpful? What are the sadhanas that are helpful for bringing the mind into, you know, a state of shanti, which even though it's a relative shanti, it is so close to the absolute shanti of yourself. And so you're just bringing your mind in as you're gaining this knowledge. You don't have this knowledge right away. You're in the process of gaining this knowledge. And you're also working on your mind, which up to this time, till you've come to knowledge, has not had knowledge. And so that means up until the time that you've come to gaining knowledge, your mind has been, you know, projecting yourself onto the world and then running after it. And that's the way of things in the world. And so how to kind of rein this mind back in? So it depends on what you come with. You may have already been a great bhakta. You may have already been practicing a lot of meditation, you know, doing all kinds of things, living an aesthetic life. You don't have knowledge, but you've been living all of this type of life, you've been very careful about following Dharma, you've lived that type of life, so the mind already is very, has a relative degree of shanti, even though it's all in Dvaita, it's all, you know, I'm serving Ishwara who's out here, but the lifestyle has already been rather focused. Focused on Dharma, focused on devotion to Bhagavan, focused on, you know, a devotion and a Shraddha to the Vedas, you know, to the scripture, and so the mind also has quite a bit of containment there. And so it's prime for being able to do Saguna Brahma Upasana, you know, and to do Karma Yoga, and to then focus on Shravana Manana Nididhyasana. Or it's less able to do that. It needs to do some, you know, some pulling the mind back and maybe doing some yoga to give some nice chalya, some strength to mind. It's more able to do that. Or maybe the mind's not even able to do that. Because it's been very extrovert. You know, very, very rajas. You know, very wanting this and wanting that and, you know, being driven, you know, to be successful in achieving your goals and all of this. And so now it needs, it's not ready to do this meditation, but it is ready to now rein it in and follow Dharma. I can do that now. That's what I want to do. I want to commit myself to following Dharma with devotion to Bhagavan. And so doing that, you also be successful. You know, your mind will mature and it will help your mind own it, this knowledge. And then he says, in the next one, but what if I can't do that either? So he says, Atayatadapyashaktosi Kartumadyogamashritaha Sarvakarma Palatyagam Tatakuru Yatatmavan Atta Etad Api Ashaktaha Asi Kartum Mat Yogam Ashritaha Sarva Karma Palatyagam Tataha Kuru Yatatmavan. He says, okay, now this also, etarapi, ashaktaha asi, cut it to him. This also, if this also, now if this you find this also you're not able to do. Ashaktaha asi means you are not able. It's the same as the asamartaha. Ashaktaha asi, cut it, you're not able to do this. Then he says, madyogam ashritaha. He says, then be one, you know, be one who is committed to the life of karma yoga. And actually, in the end, this is really what we even think of as karma yoga. Be one who is committed to a life of karma yoga, madyoga, madyogam ashritaha. Be one who is ashrita means committed to the doing this yoga, this karma yoga, for my sake. And what is that? He says, sorry, sarva karma palatyaga tattaha kuru yatatmavan. He says, be one who's with your mind controlled and in your hands. Be one who then does what we call, may you do the sarva karma palatyaga. It means, may you give up the tyaga, the fruits of your action. You know, it's not giving up all of the actions that you do and only choosing dharma. It's you're now you're doing, do your raga dvesha as long as they're within dharma. Go after your likes and dislikes, you know. But give up the results. In other words, take the results with that prasada buddhi. Take the results as a gift from me, as prasad from me. You give up the results of the action. Don't give up. Don't, if you're not able to, just perform actions for my sake. Follow dharma for my sake. You know, if that's not, you're not able to do because you have too many desires. You know, there's too many things that you really want to do or need to do that are impelling you. You go ahead and you do those things. You do those. But take the results of your actions as with that prasada buddhi. As realizing that I is Ishwara and the karmapala datta. Karmapala datta means the giver of the fruits of action. You know karmapala. Pala means fruit, so karmapala. The fruit of the action, the result of the of your actions. So in one verse, Bhagavan says, you go ahead and be the karta, the doer of the actions, but know that I am the karmapala datta. I am the one who gives the results, the fruits of the action. And so recognize, you go ahead and follow your raga and your dvesha. As long as they stay within that dharma, that yatta atmavan means one whose mind is yatta, is in your hands, is in, under your control. If your mind is under your control, then you can say no to a dharma. Right? So it's not now giving up your raga dvesha's. Don't do that raga. Don't go after that. Don't do that dvesha. It's not that. You go ahead. You go after the things that you like, and you stay away from the things that you don't like. But know that in the end, what the results of all these actions, you know, that is from me. And so receive that. Receive those results with what we call the Ishvara Arpana Buddhi or Prasada Buddhi. Receive it all as prasad. Just as when you go to a temple and you participate in the puja, and at the end the pujari comes and gives you some prasad, how you receive that prasad, you know, as something that's given to you by Bhagavan, like that you receive the result of the fruits of your action. And if you have that, if you can have that, karma yoga buddhi, you know, giving tyaga means giving up the karma pala, giving it up to Bhagavan. It's not just giving it up. It's giving it up to Bhagavan, realizing that this is what Bhagavan is giving to me, and I receive it as I would receive prasad in the temple. And then, later, you'll go on to say, in fact, of everything that I've just said, of all of this whole hierarchy, this one, in fact, is the best. So this one is the best because in fact it gives you the most latitude and at the same time gives the same result. And so too. And Swamiji will spend a lot of time on this one in particular. There's nothing wrong with the others. But in this one, you can naturally grow. And your mind, because in the same way as in all of the others, you're still in relationship to Bhagavan. Right? Because the thing is, though, you're able to live. You're able to live out your prarabdha karma. You're able to follow your likes and dislikes within dharma. But you're receiving all of the results as prasad, with that prasada buddhi. And because of that, there's a shantavritti. And so you don't have to worry. You don't have to put yourself in shackles. You know, oh, I shouldn't have that. I shouldn't want that. You know, I want that. I shouldn't go after these things that I want. You know. Well, you should not go after the things that you want if they're adharmic. But if they follow within dharma, and they're going to follow within the nature of your prarabdha, or at least possibilities within your prarabdha, then there's nothing wrong at all with going after those. If you have that prasada buddhi, because the prasada buddhi will itself give you the shanti that is very close to your own nature, and because you're doing shravana manana nididhyasana, you know, it's not that you're away from this knowledge, you're doing that, you have your teacher and you're going, you're gaining that knowledge all the while. The raga dvesha and these raga dveshas naturally fall off. The raga dveshas naturally fall off. And what is left is the raga dveshas that once they fall off is just dharma. That's all that's left. The prarabdha karma, which is Ishvara, that you find yourself in. And so as these raga dveshas fall off, the dharma is left, the world that the Ishvara that you find yourself in. And because you don't have raga dvesha, you are naturally doing what is meant for you to do in that situation. Or you can even look at it like this. What you're doing in the situation is what Ishvara is doing in the situation. There's no jiva, you know, trying to get out of the straitjacket of Ishvara. Now, I kind of say that tongue-in-cheek, but actually when you're moving against what is the natural unfoldment of the creation, you're creating a rub. You know, and so that's not the most comfortable situation. You're creating a rub because the jiva is projecting on what is and then trying to make the projection work. That's the problem. You know, if you're projecting a projection on something, the projection is not as strong as what is actually there. And the projection doesn't have much strength at all, except to subjectively make you unhappy or subjectively make you temporarily happy. It's all totally subjective. There's the objective creation of Ishvara, right? And so this is a good understanding. This is also why Swamiji will say raga dvesha, which is not opposed to Ishvara, to the Ishvara Srishti, that Ishvara's creation, we don't even call that raga dvesha. It's just that your inclination is one with Ishvara. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there's no distinction, so there's no reason to call it a raga dvesha. Raga dvesha is when the jiva srishti, you know, the projection of the jiva, is something other than the Ishvara. You're projecting something, if it matches Ishvara, it's kind of a mistake on the right side, in a way, you know. Or it's just something which is your prarabdha, which is right in harmony, your prarabdha. There's nothing in your mind that's going against your prarabdha. And so everything is fine. But the jiva is also capable of projection. So now look at what happens when there's a projection. Projection means raga dvesha, likes and dislikes, that are not in harmony with the objective creation that is much more powerful than you. Right? It's much more powerful than your mind in this sense. This table is here. This is Ishvara. Okay? I can't put a projection onto the table to turn it into a chair. Right? This is Bhagavan's creation. It's made out of Bhagavan's material. I'll say the rope snake is a good example. If I project a snake on a rope, the snake does not have the strength of the rope other than subjectively. Because subjectively, I respond to the snake. You see what I mean? And so I have it's very powerful on an emotional, subjective level. Right? So say I'm projecting onto an object my ananda. That will make me happy. It's just a projection that's layered on top of the object. But the projection is one of ananda, and the ananda, the fullness, the wholeness, the happiness, projected on the object is now away from me. And so now emotionally, I have a desire, I want to achieve that. And so, you know, I go after it and I go after it and I go through all of these machinations, emotional things around it, until I finally achieve it. But what I'm achieving is the objective object, right? Not the projection. I'm achieving the object. And so that's why the projection is ephemeral. It can easily drip off, which you experience so often. You want something, you know, you achieve that thing, you're still in the subjective world of the projection. You've achieved it, and so now the mind is so happy and ananda. But then within a few moments, the projection, just like a, you know, like a little bubble, it breaks, and you're left with the object, which now you have a different relationship with. You actually, when the bubble bursts, then you have a relationship which is with whatever is there. And you may not want that thing. It's just totally different than the projection. And so, as you're gaining knowledge, this projection of many things, the projection, but first of all, the projection of ananda, the wholeness of your being, I need this to be happy, that is pulled in as you gain knowledge naturally. The projection of satyam, of being itself, is pulled in to where being becomes the subject, the substantive, and all of this, you know, becomes mithya. So being itself is pulled into your very being. Consciousness is pulled in to being itself. Rather than belonging to the mind and the sense organs, you recognize that absolute stability and changelessness of the existence consciousness. So the sat-chit ananda that has been given to the mithya is regained, is taken back. You know? But it's not taken back literally because it never has gone anywhere. It's just the ajnanam that is ignorance that has caused all this projection. And so that's why since knowledge is taking place, shravana, manana, nididhyasana, you're studying. You know? All you need as this study is going on is to have relative shanti. You know? To give your mind a chance to mature in this knowledge. Because as you learn, you know, what was causing the disruption and the raga dvesha, you know, and the anxiety and the hurts and the bummed outness and the, all of the things, all of the different types of emotions we go through, are rooted in the ignorance which causes the projection. So as that ignorance is going away, your mind naturally stays home with reveling in the self more and more and more, because the knowledge is pulling the projections, you know, releasing you from the projection. That's what it is. You can't have.
Is there a car in the garage?
What are you smelling?
Burning.
Like burnt toast or something like that. Yeah.
It's getting worse.
And do what?
Just see if the smell is there.
Check the other window. Maybe it's coming from somewhere.
Hmm?
It's strongest, like.
It is the new, isn't it?
Nice.
It's not electrical, is it?
It's strongest in the hallway before you get to the bathroom, the bedroom.
Is it coming from outside the bathroom?
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
This little scene reminded me of the tenth man. I was thinking, this is what it must have been like for the tenth man.
You know, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell whether it's your own personal projection or whether it's Ishvara's creation. I mean, you know, there's a funny little distinction in there.
Well, it doesn't matter unless it's causing stress.
Hmm. You know? Stress?
Yeah, pain.
Well, could that be because it's 50-50, so that's Ishvara's creation also creating stress. So here we go again.
Hmm. You know, I think with the karma... That question is kind of related to free will and parabdhakarma. You know, what's what? What is my free will or my projection? What is the actual parabdhakarma?
Mm.
You know, the two are so very intertwined.
Mm.
How that resolves really in the end, and that it doesn't matter at all. You know, because you're not even really bothering to use your free will. Because the creation is fine. You appreciate the creation as Ishvara. And see, the thing is, if you think of the graham crackers, you know, it's like every moment the creation is, or Bhagavan is presenting something that you are a part of. It says, Ishvara, 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 Ishvara. And so, what's your task in that? If you're in the, that kind of the jivatva mode, you know, then do I like this or do I want it to be like this? Or I want Ishvara to change this and make it like this so that I can be happy. You know, or I want to achieve this and that. So you have a whole world that's projected upon the way the creation actually is. But that projection is just that. It's a projection and it really has nothing to do with your ananda at all. You think that it does. But actually it's just an overlay. And it really doesn't. And to the degree that you've swallow that projection, to that degree, you enjoy your life. You know, because your life, this is the really beautiful thing, is that you have your prarabdha. The prarabdha karma, that is your life. You know, and so you don't have to worry about that. Nobody can take it away from you, in fact. You know, it's yours. For better or for worse, it is yours. But there's no conflict. You know, and so, but the only way that can be a reality for a person is when the mind has discovered the source of ananda as being the self, which is changeless.
So if it's done that, and say there's still something that's upsetting, or there's still something that's there's still an anger there, could that could be natural also to the creation, right?
Yes, it can, but it's more like riding on water. It's one thing to have a primary reaction, and then quite another to have built a web of reactions around the reaction. It's kind of like this sad thing happened, and so sadness is evoked. Mm-hmm. But then there's, why did this happen to me? You know? And did I deserve for this to happen?
Well, of course.
And it can go on and on and on until, you know, like a spider's web captures and contains me in the sorrow, rather than being with the situations that produce the emotions that they do. It's not about becoming emotionally flat. You know, say a loved one passes away or something. You know, that's a beautiful thing to have that person deserve some sorrow or some, you know, some feelings.
Yeah, because even like with an emotional hurt in the unconscious, it doesn't go away. So that also is a natural.
Well, the only thing with that type of thing that's mm-hmm. all in the subjective and the unconscious is to learn how to heal those wounds. You have to think also, like, say you have a physical wound. There's some skill and knowledge. If there's some skill and knowledge about how to heal that physical wound, you know, then the body can become fine again. But say you don't have the skill or knowledge to take care of the physical wound, then it could keep disturbing you. And I think, you know, we as children and whatnot, we grow up, the psyche protects us, and we kind of pull inside into the unconscious a lot of painful affects and whatnot. You know, but now, and if you have no way of healing that, then the unconscious just, and the defense system just keeps holding that inside and projecting it outside, trying to do its best to keep some semblance of peace in your psyche. But once you know how to go inside and deal with these unconscious processes, it relieves a lot of burden. And there's many ways, not just one way to do that. There's many different ways to do it, but you have to know how to do it. And even Bhagavan has built some things in, like raising your child, if you have a child. You know, you end up giving to the child the things that often, I mean, if you haven't been terribly damaged, you'll really try to give to your child what you didn't get. And so you're healing yourself it's like you, the little child in you, is projected onto this child, and then you're giving that child all of the love and all of the things that you yourself were deprived of in one way or another. You know? You don't have children, then somehow there's other outlets to you have to do that. But with the child, it's very natural, and that's kind of built into the creation, ways to help heal.
So you're healing both. I mean,
you're healing both, to whatever extent you can. But we have now so much knowledge around and ways, you know, of helping the unconscious and unconscious pains, of actually healing it, so that the mind isn't so burdened with affect.
So if you have, say if you have an unconscious affect, you don't necessarily have to say that, well, I'm projecting onto Ishwara's creation my likes and dislikes. It's in a different category, right? I mean,
it's not so much as in a different category. It's a little bit different way of thinking. You might bring that knowledge to the forefront at a different time. You know, that's why one of the things we do is when, say you want something and you're getting all upset about it and you're not going through all kinds of things around it. Sometimes, you know, you can do inner child work around it because some little one inside is hurting. But you can also take care of the little ones inside, but you can also just say, is this worth it? Do I really do I really need to get so upset about this?
Yeah.
You know? And you can choose that, you know, this isn't really worth getting upset about, just because of what your knowledge, you bring back, you bring your mind back from that type of behavior, because it's not useful, it's not helpful.
You know, I made had a really interesting experience today. I was selling raffle tickets, it was Mira, for her school, in front of a health food store, and the idea was, we're going to sell all the raffle tickets in an hour and a half.
Uh-huh.
And the experience of the people was so interesting,
yeah.
You know. I mean, I was like, the agenda, there was really not like a fixation to the agenda, but there was just this vision that needs to be done.
Yes.
Like a karma yogi showing up for what needs to be done.
Yeah.
But then no real outcome expectation.
Yeah.
You know, so a certain relaxation about that. And the experiences were like, from people really going into major contractions, being approached, and feeling guilty, and trying to get away, to people lying, you know, saying, oh, I will come back on the way back, or something, and buy a ticket.
Yeah.
To people who would totally embrace us, and just say, oh yeah, I love to contribute.
Yeah.
And to people who would say, who are totally open and say, I don't like to contribute.
Yeah.
But, and everything else, the entire scale
yeah.
of human contraction yeah. and expansion.
Yeah.
It's just so
I've
amazing.
Done all of those. That's great.
Yeah, and then I also, you know, what you were saying, it's, like it's all a kind of projection, really. And then I realized that it's not like anybody particularly is doing that. It's just like the propta karma is just unwinding somehow.
Yeah, and it's also very unconscious behavior, too.
Yeah. Conscious and unconscious.
Conscious and unconscious.
Yeah.
Did you sell the tickets?
Yeah, we sold them all. I mean, it was very beautiful, actually. Yeah. You know, it was a beautiful experience also for Mira, because you were just saying that she could just see, you can just show up and manifest it.
Yeah.
It was just beautiful.
Yeah. How old is Mira now?
She's 6.
Wow. Amazing.
I had a question about what you just said about the you can go two ways, you can, you know, embrace the young child, but also say, like, is that worth it?
Oh no, I didn't say is embracing the young child worth it.
No.
I think that is worth it.
No, I didn't mean that.
Oh, I see.
I heard it, so like one is like embracing the child,
mm-hmm.
you know, when it's really up, and then also questioning at other times, is it worth getting, you know, upset about something?
Yeah.
And, you know, what I'm trying to figure out is this fine line where you spend time with that young child when it's really up and upset.
Yeah.
But also, if you go into it too much, it also becomes this tantrum almost, you know? It's like, there's also, I think, a time where maybe you can say, it's enough. You know, like you sometimes do with children, too. It's it's enough. You know? You're not buying into this head now anymore, you know? And that fine line is like hard for me too.
But that is the fine line of being a good parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's different ways to say it's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can say it's enough and the child in the outside world knows it's enough. But they also know that they're loved.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another way of saying it's enough where the child doesn't know that it's loved, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're doing that type of inner child work, it really is not just kowtowing to the child, it's being a good parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting structure and giving guidance. Like some Swamiji's use this friend, philosopher, and guide. You've heard this, be a friend, philosopher, and guide, you know, it's kind of a cliche thing. But when you really think of it, you know, you guide you love your child, or you love a person that you're trying to help. Friend, philosopher, and guide, you're trying to help, you know? And but there's love and friendship there,
mm-hmm.
and we want that in the inner space. We want to feel loved and cared for, and that there's wisdom there also, especially, you know, wisdom for the ego has wisdom from Bhagavan, you know, or wisdom figures, you know, or from Ishvara, the Ishtadevata. There's dharma and there's wisdom there that helps the ego, or the conscious mind. But the conscious mind, the buddhi, helps the little ones inside, you know, and the manas. The most important thing is love, really. Because nothing can grow or...
And the manas seems like it can go anywhere. Whereas the buddhi...
The buddhi gives some direction and wisdom and clarity. That's what the buddhi is. It's really the one that determinative thinking is the one that has knowledge. It's where the knowledge is stored. The manas is full of emotion, you know, and just fluctuating thinking. That's where the sorrowful emotions, the more negative emotions. We put the emotions of ananda into the anandamaya kosha. It's when the mind becomes a shanti that ananda is there. Like when you fulfill a desire, the mind becomes shanti.
Yeah.
It resolves. It's not really doing anything. But the manas is full of rajas, really. You know, there's all kinds of activity going on there. Feelings, it's more dark. So, upsetness, you know. And so, but if the buddhi comes into the manas, into the unconscious, as I like to think of it, since, you know, once your knowledge is becoming more and more clear, the buddhi as the voice of the self.
Yeah.
Once you have self-knowledge.
Yeah. You said Ishwara's voice.
Yeah, the voice of Ishwara, the voice of the self. For the voice of the self, because the self is the ananda. It is what is stable and full and whole and complete and not subject, not afraid. The self's not afraid. There's no, what we say, it's abhaya. There's no fear in the self.
And there's no hurt there then.
There's
the
no hurt.
In the buddhi. So.
Yeah. There's no hurt in the self. The self is whole and complete. You know, it's the source of all the experiences of fullness or ananda, the whole positive spectrum of experience of really because of the Buddha, because of the Atma. But that Atma, the self as you are, is also present. It's different than all of the fluctuating positive thoughts that the mind is capable of having. It's the singular being of yourself that's there no matter what the thoughts are. No matter what the emotions are. But when the mind is quiet, it reflects as though the self manifests in the mind in different ways. But if the mind has a shanti, it'll be positive.
The buddhi is the intelligence of the self?
Is what?
The buddhi would be the intelligence of the self.
Sometimes I say, not the intelligence. Yeah, the buddhi, you can say the buddhi is the... when I say the voice of the self, what I mean by that, it's all kind of like a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Like say the self by just, it doesn't speak, right? It doesn't do any action. It just simply is whole and complete itself. It doesn't do anything. But it has its own, it is what it is. And what it is, its very nature is so full and complete. And so when the buddhi has a voice, right? And so the buddhi can say, I am full and complete. Or the buddhi can say, I love you, or I care about you. What it's doing is taking that affect. You know, it's like mirroring that affect and speaking from it, from the nature of the self.
Yeah. Well, that's an affect of the self.
It's the nature of the self, and the buddhi is enjoying that nature because it's shanti. And it's not identified with anything that is ashanti, right? And so when it's talking, the buddhi is able to talk and to think and all of these things, but it's talking from the bhava of the self.
You know? But
the thing is that when that your own nature is that viveka is there and you recognize the steadiness of your being, then the steadiness of your being is always present, you know, to whatever affects are there, whatever's going on in the mind or the buddhi. And so the even need to have a voice drops off. Because the very nature of yourself is that silent voice in a way. Your presence. See, like, say your your loving presence. The mind is awake to that. Not just the presence of what you are. Your mind is awake to that and is soothed by that. The buddhi can come in and say some kind words. It says putting voice to your natural presence.
But you don't need that voice, or you don't.
You don't need the voice, because you. But the voice can be helpful too.
Mm-hmm.
You know. That's why what I say, the voice is resonates with your own nature. Whereas a hateful voice doesn't.
Mm.
The hateful voice is resonating with the manas or with complexes.
Mm.
That's not the voice of the self, that's the voice of the complex.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, what is the conscious and the unconscious component of the buddhi? It's like...
Well, we don't say unconscious.
Do they exist? No,
we'd say more like this. That the buddhi can be overwhelmed by the unconscious or by an unconscious complex.
It's like an overlay or something.
Yeah, like an overlay.
And how universal...
And the buddhi gets kind of identified with the overlay.
But the buddhi, by nature, is conscious.
Well, the mind, by the whole mind, anything sattva, say if the whole mind enjoys sattva, it's going to reflect consciousness. Whether it's the buddhi or the manas.
Potentially, unless it's overlaid. Then.
But even then, if it's overlaid, then that overlay is enjoying consciousness, right? So, for instance, the buddhi, the buddhi is overlaid by a particular mood, and it doesn't have any viveka, you know. And so, the buddhi is acting in a deluded way, in a sense. But the buddhi that can differentiate,
uh-huh.
right, from the buddhi can differentiate from whatever the experience is, and once it does that, then the buddhi now is back with the self. Because it's differentiated, you know, itself from the manas or from the mood or the emotion. So now, once again, it becomes a voice of the self. When I say that, you have to think metaphorically. It's not like the self is starting to... But just to kind of, you know, understand that the buddhi, when it's differentiated, that viveka differentiated itself from all of the things that are coming and going and objectified,
mm-hmm.
right? Then it can recognize the self on the one side, the self-evident me on the one side, and all of the activity on the other, and it can recognize itself, too, as being the one who is having this knowledge.
And, you know, the unconscious is loaded. That's almost part of the history of the jiva, right? I mean, what I'm trying to say... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the unconscious, if you take it back far enough, kind of in psychological terms, we'd have to say that the citta, the memory, is holding the whole sanchitta karma.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm saying.
Because it has to be killed in the jiva, so mm-hmm. where are we going to put it? Because, okay, it belongs to the citta.
But the other question I have is, the unconscious, it's universal, right? It's not just... I have...
Well, you have your unconscious, and I have my unconscious.
And all of these unconscious entities, positions, they all of them have affects to them. Then there's nobody that has like a... You know, you have purity of mind, but you have a purity of the unconscious.
Probably not. Because the unconscious is too big. But the thing is, you can bring to consciousness the affects that are causing you pain, but you can't bring the whole unconscious to conscious.
So nobody.
Or like Jung would say that, you know, he would say the individuation process is never complete, you know, because you can't bring that storehouse of unconscious material to consciousness, but because there's too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, you know, it's we're in duality here. And so, but what you can bring to consciousness are the things that are disruptive to your life in the world. You know, like traumas and things that are holding you back or causing you a lot of pain. You can come into relationship with those type of things. So that's all psychology, and that's what we do, and we teach it as part of Vedanta. Not because it fits right into Vedanta, and it's a modern day sadhana because we have modern day complexes. And so, I mean, the sadhanas are many and varied. For, you know, taking care of the antakarana, the ashuddhi, the problems that are causing pain relatively in the antakarana. So there's a lot of different levels to deal with the mind, but those levels are all dealt with also in the light of this knowledge. And in the end, this knowledge trumps the whole thing. You know, because this all becomes mitya. And your being is the one that is shining in amidst all of your experience. But then there are complexes and things that are kind of muddying the waters, and you want to heal them, just like you want to heal your body if you can. You know? You see, your body, you do what you can to make it, to heal it, to make it healthy, to make it functional. And to the degree that you're not able to do that, then you just take care of it, you know, and hold it with care and do the best you can with it.
But it doesn't hold it back. I mean, you don't get bondage because of that. It doesn't hold, it isn't.
Well, bondage is there is no bondage for the self.
Yeah.
So there is bondage for the body and the mind and the sense organs by their very nature. You know, because this is going to get old and sick and die. And the mind is going to be taking in all kinds of, you know, input and giving out input, and it's constantly changing. But you can hold it all in a way, you know, that takes care of it, and yourself doesn't need to be taken care of. But you need to take care of, you need to have a way of holding, you know, holding your experience. Whatever.
Whatever.
Got anything else?
No.